Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. This is your host, Jeanette Brown, and I'm delighted to be here today in Cambridge, Massachusetts at MIT Sloan School of Management with the head of admissions, Donna Levinson. Donna, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
To start, for listeners who haven't met you and haven't seen some of the great content you put out on your own site, can you tell them a little about who you are, your background, and what brought you to admissions and how long you've been in your role?
Sure. So I have to start by saying I am true blue Bostonian. I was born and raised in the Boston area. I actually attended MIT for both my undergraduate and my master's. Truth be told, I just celebrated my 35th undergraduate reunion this year, and I have my 35th master's reunion next year. So I do not have an MBA from MIT Sloan. The reality is, when I was attending Sloan, we did not give MBAs at that time. So I actually have a master's of science in management science. I would say probably 8 to 10 years after I graduated was when we introduced the MBA. So it's been a while, but nonetheless, I definitely remember my MIT years very fondly. And so after graduating from Sloan, I then spent 18 years in industry working for the firm that is now known as Accenture. And I loved virtually every minute of it, but always knew in the back of my mind that my second career would be in an academic setting. I really love being on a college campus. I love everything it stands for in terms of hope and future and possibilities, and I love it all. And so when the time came, I was really hoping it made sense to me to perhaps come back and work for my alma mater. Long story short, although I think I'm already past that, as I started working in admissions in the spring of 2007 as an application reader for the MBA program. A few months later, I actually got a full-time job at MIT in a different department, but I enjoyed reading so much that I continued to do so for the next 4.5 years until opportunities opened up at Sloan, and I lobbied very hard for one of the full-time positions here, and I actually started full-time now a little over 6 years ago, focused on one of our specialized master's programs. And then a year later, my responsibilities increased, and I've been the director of admissions for the last 5.5 years.
Tell me just a little bit about your team that you oversee.
We have an amazing team. We have around 20 people, and I say around because, to be honest, it, depending on the season and all, it fluctuates a bit. But we have 20 incredibly talented and dedicated people on our team with whom I enjoy working each and every day. We are organized, so our team has grown over the past couple of years as our responsibilities have increased in terms of the number of programs that we're responsible for. And within the last year, we have done a bit of reorganizing to be truly functionally aligned. So we have a marketing team, we have an operations team, we have a recruiting team, and we have an evaluation team. We also have a primary contact for each of the programs that we support. So in addition to the two-year MBA, we support the Master of Finance program, the Masters of Business Analytics program, the Sloan Fellows MBA program, and a small program that is called the MSMS program. But we really believe, given the volume of work that we do, the right way to be organized is, in fact, functionally to really develop the expertise in each of these areas.
So the person heading up MBA specifically, as most of our readers are applying to the MBA, is you?
Not necessarily. So I have overall responsibility.
You have overall responsibility.
Right. I share overall responsibility, actually, with Ron Garcia, who I think is familiar to many people who've been pursuing, looking into MBAs over the years. So Ron and I share responsibility for the overall team. The primary contact is actually an internal contact for whom our program offices have, who they know is their direct contact should they have any questions or with whom they coordinate. It's more of an internal responsibility.
The organization within functional groups is below you.
Correct.
But that's new. And
so we've been migrating towards that over the last couple of years. We really formalized it, I think, within the last year.
And do you anticipate additional growth, or are you now where you need to be?
So I think at this point we are pretty much where we need to be. We are constantly talking about and looking for ways to improve ourselves, both in terms of operational excellence, as well as introducing new and innovative ways to reach out to prospects and to talk to people around the world. And so it never gets boring and it never gets old.
What about your role do you most enjoy?
Oh, so I enjoy the people. And I have actually been asked this question, as you can imagine, many times. And so I've thought a lot about what the right answer is. And I've chosen the word people because that's really all-encompassing in terms of the people on my team who I've already talked about, the faculty, my colleagues here at Sloan, but also all of the really interesting people that I get to meet when I travel all over the world, people who are interested in our MBA program or any other of our programs. It's really all about the people.
And you do still do quite a bit of travel.
I do. In fact, I am leaving on July 4th for 2 weeks of travel in Asia. That'll be a combination of recruiting events for the MBA program, our Sloan on the Road events, as well as for some of the other programs that we support.
Now, about Sloan, what is the single most exciting development, change, or event happening at Sloan in the year ahead?
So for me, I actually think that answer is the unknown. And what I mean by that is something that was really reinforced over the past year or so. So the mission of the Sloan School, of the MIT Sloan School, is in fact to identify and tackle the world's biggest problems and really make an impact. And I think this past year, we really had the opportunity to do just that. I was walking down the hall in, I don't know, maybe some last fall, late fall sometime, and I bumped into a student and asked her how things were going. And she mentioned to me that she was currently working on several projects related to helping Puerto Rico get back on its feet for, you know, a couple of different classes with the different focuses. And that really, really resonated with me. The fact that we have the desire, the interest, the resources, and the flexibility to be able to dedicate resources to helping out in a situation like what happened in Puerto Rico, I really think speaks volume to the mission of the school and really what the school is all about. In addition, over the last couple of years, this past year, we actually introduced what we're calling USA Lab, which is an example of one of our action learning lab classes with a focus on situations right here in the United States. So one of the projects was a rural development initiative in Eugene, Oregon, helping to develop the seafood sector along the northern coast of Oregon. Another was looking at job growth in Maine, and a third was looking at developing child care for the local community in Dubuque, Iowa. And so our ability, again, to direct resources on problems that unfortunately come up, you know, every day is really something that excites me. It makes me really proud to be part of the MIT Sloan community.
And I would imagine that it's something that really excites students as well. I mean, you come to business school, people think of it as 2 years out of the world, where in fact, it's quite the opposite. They're looking at seeing problems happen in real time and then learning the skills here by addressing those problems.
I agree completely.
That sounds terrific. Tell me about something that you think might be overlooked at Sloan. When people think about Sloan, is there something they don't recognize as a real strength, or perhaps have a misconception of Sloan as a school for X?
We often get asked by prospects whether or not you have to have a tech background, you have to be an engineer to be able to get into Sloan and to succeed at MIT Sloan. And the answer is absolutely not. I understand when you look at our class profile, you see 30-35% of our students actually have an engineering background. I like to think that's because there's a lot of engineers looking for us, not so much that we're necessarily focused on looking for them. We really definitely want people who have demonstrated a strong academic ability, and you can do that, though, in many ways. And so I would encourage anybody, not just people with engineering backgrounds, not even people with just STEM backgrounds, to come and take a look at us. In addition, I think people often question whether or not the curriculum is itself, therefore, just heavily targeted towards people with engineering or STEM backgrounds. And again, that is not the case. We have a one-semester core. We then have 3 semesters for you to really shape the curriculum to meet your own interests. And that gives people, a breadth of different areas in which they can actually delve. We have incredibly strong finance faculty. I wanted to make sure I got that in because I think that's also a misperception out there. There are those who say that modern finance was born here at MIT Sloan. We have a really, really strong faculty. We have a great set of finance courses for people. So please come and take a look.
And I didn't ask you to prepare this, so don't worry if you don't know the numbers, but have demographics shifted at all in terms of people with STEM backgrounds, engineering backgrounds versus others? Are you seeing a more diverse class in terms of backgrounds as more people get over that misconception of Sloan?
I think if you actually look at our class profile over the last 3 to 5 years, you're not going to see a significant shift in terms of their academic backgrounds. You will definitely see a shift in terms of people's interests. And this is more from, conversations that we have throughout the admissions process, through the interview, in terms of what people's interests are. We have definitely seen a bit of a shift. We have a lot of people who want to come to MIT Sloan to do something at the intersection of tech and anything, whether that be finance or tech in healthcare, tech and education. We see a lot of people with those interests. We also see a lot of people interested in entrepreneurship. So there has been a bit of a shift in terms of people's interests, but not necessarily when you in background. I'm actually anchoring more on their academic background as opposed to what industry or job they're coming from.
You mentioned the mission of Sloan, and I remember I wrote a story about Sloan and how mission-centric it is. And, every business school has a mission, but how important is it for applicants to understand Sloan's mission? Because it's been my experience in talking to Sloan students that people really take it seriously, and it's very much the fabric of the school.
So I think it's really important, and I think if you look at what we do in terms of how we represent the school from a recruiting standpoint, we always talk about the fact that we're a mission-driven school. If you look at the application, we haven't gotten there yet, but if you look at our application in particular, we ask an essay question if you're invited for an interview, and that essay question is a reminder that we're a mission-driven school and how your personal goals align with that. It's very important, and I personally really like that. So I often get asked, so I will talk to students in September. So new students have been here a couple of weeks, and I'll ask them how things are going and what the biggest thing that surprises them. And without hesitation, the majority of them will say to me, I just love all of my classmates. I can't believe how wonderful all of my classmates are. I thought this was going to be the case, but it's even more so than I am. How do you do that? And it's not me personally, but how does the process do that? And I actually think the fact that we are mission driven, that we talk about it, it attracts a certain type of person and it weeds out others for whom this isn't necessarily their thing. And for the most part, people who align with our mission, people who really want to focus on making the world a better place, they tend to be pretty good people. Well, the opposite of that, which I often say, is they tend not to be jerks. And we really focus very much on creating a jerk-free environment.
Now, I'm going to ask you, if you will, to walk us through the life of an application in your office from an operational standpoint. What happens? An applicant clicks submit, then what happens? How many times is their application read? Who's doing the reading? In the event that there's an interview, how does that fit into the process? Does the committee meet to discuss every file? Do they meet when there's dissension? And our listeners will take as much detail as you are willing to divulge.
I appreciate that, and I will share varying levels of detail throughout. And I partially do that because at the end of the day, we must have the flexibility to administer a process that yields the most qualified people for our program. And if that's what our objective is, we have to have some level of variability throughout. And so while I know people are eager to hear what percentage of people get invited for an interview, that number can vary. And in fact, I think that number should vary, again, depending on the quality of the applicant pool and depending on what stage you are in the process. So let me start from the beginning. The first and foremost, if you submit an application the day after the application goes live or the day of our deadline, you're going to get treated the same way. So we basically don't look at applications. We don't start our process until our deadline date.
So there's not advantage to submitting early unless your application is completely ready. Don't rush it. But maybe don't leave it till the very last second.
Well, don't leave it till the last second only because, you know, you should never
have
anything
to
write. Exactly. I didn't want to say that our system could crash, but you just never know what happens. But fundamentally, so we will continue to have three rounds, just like we have had the last couple of years. And we don't start processing and reading applications until the round deadline. You do ask, though, about submitting early, and I can only recommend that you should apply in the round that is early as possible that you're comfortable with. And the reason for that is not because we have quotas per round, but because we don't have quotas. So round one, our class size is roughly 350 two-year MBAs. It's overall 400 with LGO, Leaders for Global Operation, but it's 350. And practically speaking, in round one, we have 350 seats to fill. In round two, I don't know what that number is, but I can guarantee you it's less than 350. So I encourage you to apply as early as you are comfortable based on each of our round deadlines. So after the round one deadline, we have a core group of trained readers who are reading our applications. You ask how many reads, it depends. Applications get read 1 to n times depending on a variety of factors. But coming out of that, we then identify a subset of people for whom we would like to invite for an interview. Interviews are a required next step in the process, and they're by invitation only. And they are in person, unless there's a snowstorm, which this past year we definitely had a couple of challenging days. We actually had last year a couple of times when we had people who were able to make it to Cambridge themselves, but then we weren't able to make it, so they were actually Skype. We apologize to anybody listening for whom that might have been the case. But weather permitting, we actually really like these to be face-to-face. We travel the globe for round one and round two to get in, I think we go to 15 or 20 hub cities where we then invite you for a face-to-face interview. The as part of the interview, as I mentioned earlier, we actually ask you to submit a second essay for us. And this coming year, a slight change is that essay is actually going to be in video format. So this essay is around the mission of the school, which I've already mentioned, and also around the importance of creating a diverse community and how you plan to contribute to the diversity of the MIT Sloan community. And this year, we will ask you to deliver that in the form of a video.
What prompted your move toward video?
We like a little change. So if you've been following us, you know last year we introduced the video, a 60-second video of introducing yourself to your classmates, your future classmates. We liked what we saw in terms of the data that we were able to extract from that, as well as just talking to prospects and eventually some of our admits about just how much they had to think about. You know, you think, oh, that's easy, introduce myself to my classmates. But then when you actually sit down to start recording, you then start asking yourself, okay, what's important to me that other people know about me? It was a very thoughtful question. And we really liked the video format. And so every year we like to change up a little bit, and this is going to be our change up for this year. So the interview essay is in fact now going to be submitted via a video. So interviews are roughly 30 to 45 minutes, and please, I beg you, do not, after your interview, look at how many minutes it took and then assume that you're going to know how good, what the overall effect of it was based on the number. It varies. It's a conversation. We're building on what we've learned about you through the initial written application. I think about the interview in three stages. There's the any follow-up that we might have from the application, questions that we may have in terms of gaps in employment or something else that we really want to get clarification on from the application itself. We'll then ask you a series of behavioral questions. And then finally, we will give you the opportunity to ask us questions. Go ahead.
Two questions. The first is, who's conducting the interviews?
Yep. Interviews are conducted by our admissions staff. They are not conducted by students, and they are not conducted by people who are alums.
And can you give an example of a behavioral-based interview question for those who might not be familiar?
Absolutely. So an example is, tell me about a time where you were part of a project team and there were conflicting priorities within the team. What was, you know, explain the situation, tell me what your specific role was and how did you resolve that?
And you said that it sounds like the interviewers are coming in with a very clear grasp of your application and digging deeper. So this is
correct.
Not a blind interview.
Absolutely not. The interviewer has access to your entire application.
And then once the interview has taken place, how is that conveyed to the rest of the team making a decision?
Yep. So our interviewers have, in fact, a scorecard that they need to fill out, assessing various different attributes of the conversation, and then with a summary and with their personal recommendation in terms of whether or not we should admit somebody, we should potentially waitlist them, or we should reject them.
And then do you meet as a committee to make decisions? How frequently?
Well, so then we have a variety of admissions committee meetings. And again, that really depends on, based on where we are at this stage in the process, how many people have made it through, how many people we're now seriously considering for admissions. That varies also. And again, I think it's really important for us to be able to have this fluidity throughout the process, because our goal is really to admit the most qualified people at every stage in the process. If you apply in round one, you have the option of being waitlisted, actually in round two as well. And if you're waitlisted in round one, you are considered as part of the round two pool, which is a distinction separate from we admit people in round two, and then if we have extra space, we go to the waitlist. So you are considered as part of the round two pool, and then for round two, we actually consider anybody who's been waitlisted, who's still on the waitlist, as part of the round three pool.
That is an interesting distinction. Talk to me a little bit about the decision. I know it was a couple years ago, and we spoke on the phone about it, the decision to add a round three. It's interesting now some other schools are going in the opposite direction. Why did you decide to add a round three, and what's working about it that you're keeping it around?
Yep, so we decided to add a round three. I think this will be our third or fourth year this coming year with a round three, and it gave us the opportunity have people who, in a lot of cases, it's people who there's been a change in their situation. So they were thinking of applying to business school the following year, but something happened either personally or professionally that it then has accelerated their decision and their interest in applying to business school. And by having a round three in the spring, they now have the opportunity to, in fact, apply and to start that fall. And there are very qualified people for whom, again, this is a really good fit, who fall into that category. And so to give them that opportunity, we like it.
But to reiterate what you said before, you would encourage those who are ready to apply sooner to apply in the earliest round possible because you've got the most seats available.
Correct.
Now let's talk about essays. How does your team approach the essay portion of the application specifically? What are you looking for as you read them? Are there common mistakes that applicants should try to avoid? One thing they should think about as they sit down to write them?
Yep.
Any other advice?
Yeah. So for us, if you look at our application, the essay currently takes the form of a cover letter, a 300-word cover letter. And the best advice that I give when asked about this, and we're asked about this a lot, is leave us wanting to know more about you. We completely understand that in 300 words, there is no way you're going to be able to tell us everything there is to know. But like a cover letter that you would write for a job, you're telling us enough about you. You're telling us about you. You're telling us about what your interests are and how they align well with, you know, us as a school, to us wanting to know more about you. I think the best piece of advice in terms of what not to do, again, given that you have 300 words, is it is not necessary to restate what's on our website or in our brochure. That's a waste of real estate, of precious real estate. So we know what's on our website and in our brochure. And so for you to, you know, in a couple of words, connect what your interests are and a little bit about your background with us is sufficient, but don't spend a lot of time on that.
I can imagine that applicants reiterate what's on websites and in brochures in an effort to show that they know your school. Do you have advice for ways that applicants can demonstrate that they've done their research and that they know MIT Sloan and there's something specific about this school, but not taking up that valuable real estate?
So two responses to that. The first is, a phrase that's a Sloan-specific phrase or a concept, that's fine. I'm talking about literally sentences dedicated to this. So absolutely. But the second is, come meet us. Come to an event. Come to campus. Come, to one of our events all over the globe. As I mentioned, I'm leaving for Asia for 2 weeks to travel. We're going to be all over the U.S. In the next couple of months. Come meet us. Come meet with us. That also demonstrates interest. It demonstrates, knowing about us. It helps you get a better sense. There is no better way for you to really get a sense or feel in terms of fit than spending time with us. So please come and do that.
And tell me a little bit about the decision to use a cover letter. That seems like another opportunity where you're giving applicants in this case the chance to develop skills that they are going to use from this day forward as part of the application process. I'm imagining that's the thinking behind it.
So you said it better than I could. Exactly.
And do you ever find, I think it might be really interesting, do applicants take a look at what they wrote as their cover letter coming in and what they are then writing as their cover letter going out?
I actually don't know about that, but I would imagine yes. I would imagine just knowing our students. On occasion, I've had a student come to me as they're graduating, coming to chat with me sort of to close the loop on their experience, and they'll often, say, so, what did you think about me in our interview? It's interesting because they themselves want to reflect on the past 2 years. So I can imagine, yes.
Well, and I mean, obviously, you're hoping that this will be a transformative experience, so it won't be the 100%. Same cover letter coming in as it was going out, but that same ability to self-reflect and communicate who you are and how you see that playing a role is a valuable skill. You've been at this a while, and you said that you, even before you were full-time, you were in the role of reading applications. How many essays, round number, would you wager you've read in your time at Sloan?
Thousands.
Do you remember them? What makes an essay memorable, and is it good or bad to be memorable?
So that's great. I've been thinking a little bit about this in preparation for this, and I can remember, I know this is probably going to be a shocker, but I can remember three that I would call bad. I can't repeat why, but they were definitely people who thought being provocative was the right way to go. Some of them were related to what the topic was. Others was language that was used right up front to capture my attention. I'm not sure those people got very far in the process. And then there's another three to five that are really memorable because, again, I read their applications and I couldn't wait to meet these people in an interview. I couldn't wait. One in particular, I remember he actually just graduated this year. And I remember when I met him, I said, I couldn't wait to meet you after reading your application. And then after the interview, I said, you did not disappoint. And what makes a great application? So part of it is people are telling a story in all of the different components of your application. You're telling us a story that hopefully sticks together, which is the cover letter. It's the resume, provides some more detail. It's your letters of recommendation. It's now your video essay. And you're telling us a story. And I think any good story is compelling. It's well written. It's well structured. It flows well. And these are all the things that make really a very memorable application.
Well, what are three pieces of advice you would offer to someone who is preparing for an interview? And again, this is going to be with a member of the admissions staff at Sloan or in one of the hub cities that you travel to.
Correct. So number one, be yourself. There's no wrong answers. We have no expectations in terms of what you're going to say, how you're going to say it. So number one is be yourself. Number two is be prepared. And by that, it's mostly, make sure you've read your application. You may have submitted your application a few months before. just know what's on the application, because we may be asking you questions, as I mentioned earlier, specific to your application. So refresh yourself with your application. And then the third, be prepared to ask a couple of questions, insightful, meaningful questions, and not questions whose answers are on our website. So don't ask about class size. Don't ask about tracks and certificates specifically, but if there's, you're interested in finance, you may want to ask broader questions related to that specific field. But think about a couple of questions that I think, again, show your interest, show you've done your homework. You asked about that earlier, but that you want to go beyond that.
And are there changes in the works to the admissions process? I imagine it's sort of always an evolving process. You talked about an additional video element. Maybe tell us a little bit more about that or anything that's in the pipeline.
Yeah, so that really, the video essay that I mentioned, which is now going to replace the written essay for people invited for an interview, that is the change that's coming this year. Beyond that, I don't know of anything specific.
And that was an innovation in and of itself, to have this essay for people once they've reached
Yep.
the interview process, which puts less pressure on your team, but also less pressure on the entire applicant pool. You're sticking with that decision.
Absolutely. It works great. So we feel that in the initial written application, we have enough data to help assess capability. And then as we move into the interview portion, which includes this essay as well as the interview itself, we're then looking more at fit, which I think is something that the applicant themselves is doing as well.
Do I remember correctly that MIT Sloan is one of the schools that allows you to link your LinkedIn profile?
Yep.
And that's been true for a couple years?
It's optional, but yes, we ask you if you want to provide us with your LinkedIn profile.
And that's just to simplify the process, or also because LinkedIn is playing an increasingly prevalent role in the job search that they'll be involved in when they're here? What was the thinking in terms of that?
So LinkedIn is a resource where people provide a lot of data about themselves. And as we're throughout our process looking to know you as best as we can, then I think that's just another great resource for us to have.
Now, a question that I could see some applicants asking themselves, if you don't choose to go that route, is your team going to go look at the LinkedIn profile?
Maybe.
But if you do go that route, clearly you want your LinkedIn profile to be up to date and reflecting everything that you want the admissions committee. You're saying, look at my LinkedIn profile, make sure
right.
it's great.
Yes.
And are you seeing more people take advantage of that opportunity?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I would guess yes, but I honestly don't know.
That brings me to the end of my questions, but I'd like to invite you to share anything we haven't touched on.
Thank you. So I think by the time this podcast goes live, our application will have gone live as well. So I encourage people to go to the website and start looking. The other thing is, in fact, just encouraging people to come and get to know us better. And you can do that in a variety of ways. Please come visit. We run an ambassadors program during the academic year where you can actually attend a class, have lunch with current students, and meet with one of our admissions reps. Throughout the summer, we are traveling the globe doing our Sloan on the Road information sessions. We'll be at the MBA tour. We'll be at Forte events. We're also hosting our own Women's Week. This is probably the sixth or seventh year, and it grows every year. It begins on July 30th and runs through August 2nd, where we'll be in a half a dozen or so different cities throughout the U.S., and we'll actually be in London this year, so we're excited about that. And please just come in and visit us. If you're interested in, getting on our email list, please go to our website and register your interest with us, and we'll start sending you communications and emails, and we would love to hear from each and every one of you.
And you also have a blog, right? And you really keep people up to date in terms of the application process and changes. Are you going to be giving that to someone else?
No. So I continue to have a director's blog. We're just looking at, as anybody does these days, we're looking at the results in terms of the interest level, and is there perhaps a better way to share that information? So stay tuned.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to speak to you. And thanks for having us here on campus.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for asking.